ich darf Sie herzlich willkommen heißen zu unserem zweiten Teil. Ich hoffe, Sie hatten ein Stück Apfelstrudel, einen Topfenstrudel, Kaffee, Wasser und natürlich auch ein gutes Gespräch. Das ist das Wichtigste hier. Wir legen jetzt gleich los mit dem zweiten Block. Wir haben ja eingangs gesagt, am Anfang geht es um so eine Draufsicht, um Erklärungen, wie Ungleichheit zustande kommt, wer die Treiber von Ungleichheit sind. Und jetzt im zweiten Block wollen wir in konkrete Beispiele gehen, wie man Ungleichheit beenden, beseitigen, vermindern kann. Dafür heiße ich sehr herzlich willkommen Simon Bukenya. Er arbeitet für AFSA, das ist die Allianz für Ernährungssicherheit in Afrika. Und Simon Bukenya wird uns das Konzept der Agrarökologie vorstellen und dann darauf eingehen, welche Möglichkeit wir haben, mit Agrarökologie Ungleichheit zu verringern.
Thank you very much. A good evening to everyone here. Very happy to see all of you, and very happy that we are all very much concerned about the... Okay, am I audible enough? Can the people at the back hear me? Give me a thumbs up. Thank you. My name is Simon Bukenya. I work with Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa, AFSA. The Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa is the largest civil society network in Africa that works around issues to do with climate justice, food systems, food sovereignty. And our major aim is actually to drive the transition to agroecology in Africa as an approach to sustainable food systems, as an approach to achieving climate change adaptation and resilience in Africa, and as an approach to creating better livelihoods and standards of living through food systems and agroecology. So my presentation today is going to be centered around why agroecology should be pushed and advocated for as an approach to achieving ecological justice. And I'm so happy that the first speakers gave us a good overview of the inequalities that we face globally, not just in Europe, but the world at large. And we've been hearing some comparisons between the global north and the global south when it comes to these inequalities. So what exactly is ecological inequality? I hope I'm... All right. Sorry about that break. But what exactly is ecological inequality? We face a number of challenges, and one of the biggest crises that has been spoken about here is the climate crisis. And we all understand that it's a crisis that we are all facing globally, and we shouldn't actually deny. I know there are some few climate deniers that we've heard about, especially from the global north. I wouldn't mention names now, but it's a big challenge that people still deny that the climate crisis is not happening. But then the ecological inequality is disparities in access to natural resources, for example. The distribution of access to natural resources. In so many countries in Africa, we have a lot of resources, but some regions may have resources and some regions may not. The economic value that comes out of these resources, how is it distributed across the whole countries and across the whole continent, for example? We know that the Congo Basin is one of those areas in Africa that is extremely wealthy, extremely rich when it comes to natural resources. But then, who actually benefits from these natural resources? Have you ever asked yourself, why do we see a lot of minerals being exported out of Africa to the countries in the global north, to the countries in North America, to countries in Asia. And all the proceeds actually that come out of these minerals, honestly, are not supporting the African people at all. It's very sad, but countries in the Congo Basin have some of the poorest people in Africa. When you go to Kinshasa, for example, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, you look at the city. Kinshasa is one of the largest cities in Africa. Over 15 million people living in that city, but in poverty, abstract poverty. But they are the wealthiest nation in this world. Also, we have to understand that vulnerable communities often lack access to fertile land. Africa faces, many African countries have policies, land policies that are really not favorable at all, and only favor a few people, especially those with money. We've seen a number of investors come from Asia, come from Europe, and they have been awarded large chunks of land by our governments. Big chunks of land to cultivate, do monocultures, and do high input agriculture, destroying the land, destroying the soil. But what about the rural people in Africa? We face a problem of land fragmentation because people do not have access to land. Those who can acquire land can only afford to acquire very small chunks. And the biggest portions of land, especially the arable land, is given to investors. So that people still live in abstract poverty because they cannot cultivate enough food to feed their families, but also to sell and get a livelihood out of this. Most of these communities, we all understand, are the most impacted by this climate crisis, the health crisis, and food systems crisis because we face a challenge of malnutrition. And of course, Africa faces that challenge, but it's not because of lack of food production. There's a lot of food being produced in Africa, contrary to what the media shows. But the challenge we have is that we have unequal distribution of this food. So many regions produce a lot of food, nutritious food, but then we hear so many other regions actually facing a problem of hunger. In Kenya last year, for example, we saw one of the most devastating droughts and famines in the world, where over 2 million animals lost their lives because they couldn't have feeds, they couldn't have water, and a number of people lost lives as well in Kenya and the Horn of Africa. Yet, some countries are producing a lot of food. Countries like Uganda. I come from Uganda and I know that our country produces a lot of food, nutritious food. But most of this food actually goes to waste. And it goes to waste because of unfavorable trade laws, laws that do not accept free export to other African countries. And this is done because the government leaders, the African government leaders, may not agree. They do not agree on some of these policies because they have been influenced. And they have been influenced by countries from the global north, governments from the global north. They influence a lot of African policy decisions and implementation. I'll give an example of Kenya. Kenya and Uganda, they are neighbors in the East African community. But just recently, Uganda used to export maize to Kenya. Maize, like nutritious maize, because it's one of those products that Kenya consumes a lot. But then the borders were closed on Uganda, and Uganda could not export any more maize to Kenya. Why? Because some government officials in Kenya made a deal with Mexico to import maize into Kenya from Mexico. Imagine you are bordering a country that has been supplying you with good quality maize, but then you cut those ties and you want to export from as far as North America. It's a pity, but that is what we are facing. So I'll just highlight a few challenges of what the ecosystems are facing globally. And we all understand that these are challenges that we can agree on. Number one is population explosion. Unlike countries in the global north, many countries in Africa have high birth rates. Countries like Uganda, the population is increasing very drastically at a very high speed. And these are countries that actually, the poorest, You know, it's a pity that the poorest countries are the ones that are actually having a big population increase. Every year the population increases in these countries. And we wonder how these countries are going to survive to support their citizens, support their people, support these large numbers of population that are increasing each and every year. Then we have land and forest degradation as another challenge. Because of this population explosion, the populations now have to encroach on the forests, have to encroach on the natural resources, on the wetlands, because they need land to cultivate food to feed their population. They need land to build infrastructure, to build houses where they're going to live, the homes where they're going to live. But then we understand that this comes at a cost and it affects the environment. We have decreasing biodiversity, and this actually is a very big challenge globally. I talked about the Congo Basin as one of the largest tropical forest and vegetation covers in the world. It's actually the second after the Amazon. A lot of biodiversity extraction is happening there. We are losing so many animals, especially the wild animals. We are losing so many species of plants. And now when we talk about loss of seed, African seed, we are trying to fight as much as possible to ensure that Africans control their own seed. Seed in Africa is so diverse, a number of species. But now, with the emergence of seed companies, especially from the global north, that are actually luring African farmers into consuming their seeds, into buying their seed, the African seed is being lost. We are losing the species, the African species of seed. And we are afraid that Africans are going to lose control of their own seed and their own food systems because of this. I just learned a few days ago, I was in Linz, and we have visited one of the small-scale farmers there. And I just learned that actually, most of the farmers here have to buy seed from seed companies. It's a pity. And the farmer told me that they cannot exchange that seed with another farmer, even if they might apply the seed. If they want to sell the seed, they have to sell it back to the seed company. That is control. They're controlling your seed. And that is what we are trying to fight, and fight the decrease in biodiversity. Cultural erosion is another challenge. Unplanned urbanization. Very many African cities, if anybody here has visited any African city, you will see that most of our cities are really unplanned. It's my first time in Europe and my first time in Austria, and I was really mesmerized at the level of infrastructure development, infrastructure preservation here in Austria. The public transport system is so effective. But you go to African cities, that's why there's a lot of emergence of slums in many African cities, because of unplanned urbanization. Then the climate crisis, of course, and global political interventions. We cannot run away from global politics. We can't. We all have to take part in political discussions, and that is why we encourage the young people of each and every nation to be involved in policy discussions. And policies to do with inequalities, it's going to affect the future generation, so the young people have to involve themselves in political discussions. So, agroecology as an approach to solving ecological inequalities globally. What is agroecology, first of all? I know some of you have heard about agroecology, some of you understand agroecology. It's a term that has actually been contested a lot by some few countries. I understand the European Union is one of those few organizations or bodies that is very much in support of agroecology being put into a number of national policies, policies to do with climate change, policies to do with agriculture, policies to do with environment. And as AFSA, as an organization, but also many other African civil societies and individuals, like-minded individuals, we believe that this is an approach that is actually very sustainable and an approach that can create ecological justice and ecological quality. Agroecology has three arms. The first one is the science. The second is the social movement and a practice. When you talk about agroecology, what comes to some of our minds is food systems and agriculture. But agroecology is not just about agriculture and food systems. Social justice movement, building a movement. And if we build a movement, it's a movement that is diverse and a movement that brings together each and everybody. And when we come together, that's when we discuss the issues that are affecting us as societies and communities globally. And that is when we discuss about the inequalities we face and how to counter them. So I'll speak about agroecology using its 13 principles and how these principles can create ecological justice. The first principle is on diversity. I said that most of our societies are losing their biodiversity. And we all understand that the impacts that come with loss of biodiversity in society. For example, there is a movement here in Austria that is fighting hard to keep, to preserve the bees. We were in a school yesterday in St. Florian, and they have a movement that is preserving bees and making sure that they multiply the bees, because we understand the importance of this. We understand the importance of biodiversity. Then we have synergy. We have to come together. Civil society and government have to work together. In Africa, it's difficult for civil society organizations to collaborate with governments, unlike here in Europe, because I've seen the civil society organizations here in Austria engaging with their governments, and it's a bilateral engagement, very smooth, because we have to understand each other's challenges and know how to support. And in most cases, actually, the civil society is doing much more work and supporting government interventions. And this is where government gets knowledge to implement some projects, implement activities in different countries that are developmental. Then, because of time, I have to run through these. We have efficiency, we have resilience, we have recycling, human and social values, culture and food traditions. I've seen that a lot here, and I've actually loved it very much, that people here understand the food culture, understand consumerism, because it's not just about food production, but also consuming this food. Because we have to understand the impacts that come with consuming, the impacts that come with production of food. The only challenge we have is the disparities in production. And like I said, Africa actually has the largest portion of the farmers in Africa, small-scale farmers. And a small portion of the farmers are the large companies, large farming companies, are the large corporations. But then who gets the better support? Imagine government is supporting the industrial companies instead of supporting the small-scale farmers, which actually feed the continent. They feed 60% of the continent. But the support is not there. In as much as we try to advocate for this support for these small-scale farmers, the support is lacking. And with international cooperation, it's difficult for governments, for example, the European Union, to work closely with the farmer movements and farmer organizations, or to channel funding and support directly to organizations that are actually doing work on ground, because they want to keep the relations with the governments, with the African Union, with the policymakers. And the money is always not actually putting the impact on ground. The funding, the support that is coming from the international cooperation does not really reach where it's supposed to reach. And that is a big challenge that we have. These are some of the inequalities that we face. I feel like we need to revise the design of our funding mechanisms. And most of the funding bodies like the EU supporting Africa needs to redefine how they send that support to Africa and the African organizations and African citizens and people. Because there's so many projects happening in Africa from the EU, funded by the EU, funded by the US, funded by China. But then we don't see any visible change happening on ground. Where is all this money going to? The World Bank, for example, has supported, has funded countries like Kenya recently, and Uganda at the moment, countries like Niger, over $250 million per country for climate smart agriculture. But we don't see this funding happening. We don't see any changes happening. It's a pity. Responsible governance. We are all responsible for this. Circular economy, co-creation and sharing of knowledge. We are doing this right now. Then food sovereignty, very much important. I talked about the corporate control of African food systems, and we are trying actually to fight that. The African seed, very many corporations, very many companies, seed companies, are rushing to Africa to sell fertilizer, to sell seed, and the farmers are being lured every day over radios and televisions, telling them how resilient the hybrid seed is. But it can't be resilient, more resilient than a seed that Africans have been planting for many years, over and over again, for many seasons. I think that's not true, and we are trying to fight that. Animal health and welfare, fairness, are other principles of agroecology that can help us, can support us in creating ecological justice. For animal health, it's very much important, and we think that the industrial production of animals is very dangerous to the ecosystems, extremely dangerous. We need to have these animals as part of our lives, and agroecology is natural, agroecology is a way of life. And in Africa, we have a big relationship, a strong relationship with our animals. If you go to farmers in Africa, for example, I'll give an example of Uganda, the cows, farmers have a good relationship with their cows. They have a relationship with their goats, with their sheep. They know when they let them free to go and graze, the goats will come back. They will not be inside a cage all day, all year. Because we know the benefits of animals on the ecosystem. Thank you.